This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 40% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale Last Chance right now and save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 40% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, hit it.
It's the Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called the show.
Yeah. Now, Amy Marks-Kors, Chris Ronji on KMOX.
Oh, what a brilliant day it is. Good morning to you. It is the Chris and Amy Show. We've got Amy Marks-Kors. We've got me. We've got you. I'm Chris Ronji. Hello. Our producer, Matt Pajeski. Welcome into the fun. We guarantee for the next 3 hours, you're going to have a ball.
I don't know that we can guarantee.
Okay, we're going to guarantee for the next 3 hours that we will fill your ears with stuff.
That's probably the safer bet. Yeah. You don't want to guarantee these days.
No, I can't. Don't do that. You'll get sued.
You will get sued.
You got to deliver on the guarantee.
Absolutely.
We've got a number. You know what it is. 314-436-7900. That's a text number, too. You can just text us. We don't care. Also, on the Odyssey app, which is the streaming app that we have. It's the free one. It's not like YouTube TV where they keep jacking it up every month by $10. Odyssey app is free. You put it on your phone. You can stream KMOX live. You can listen to Cardinals baseball live. And you can send us a voice message. There's a button right there that says send a message. And you can record it and we will hear it. And maybe you'll get to hear it on the air.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Well, there's a lot going on in the state of Missouri. Also, Heat Up St. Louis, an initiative that is happening now and every year. And Governor Mike Kehoe will be joining us today.
And more Trump cabinet confirmations moving forward. Tulsi Gabbard was confirmed as the director of intelligence yesterday. Kash Patel will face his confirmation today. We'll chat with Major Garrett.
Yeah, we got Major coming up here at 10:30 as always. And it looks like Nolan Arenado is going to start the season with the Cardinals unless something happens here, because Alex Bregman, the big free agent third baseman, he has signed with the Boston Red Sox. So that is a pretty big deal when you are trying to move Arenado, and it looked like Boston was the likely place for him to go. And now that he's not gone there and Bregman has gone there, I don't know where Nolan ends up, because Buster Olney today was saying that it looks like the Yankees are not interested, or at least they have not been talking to his representatives or the Cardinals about Arenado.
Are you surprised that the Red Sox went that way, or is that kind of what people were thinking?
I honestly thought it could go any way here, really.
Yeah.
The one thing I was thinking, is that the Cubs might end up offering a little bit more, which they didn't. Bregman ended up getting a 3-year contract, but it's like a $40 million per year, and he's got opt-outs. So he was offered more money for fewer years than what anybody else was willing to give him. And with that not happening, so the Cubs not getting him, that would have been, to me, the best case scenario for the Cardinals trying to move him. Mm-hmm. Is if he ended up with Chicago and therefore Boston remained open and they could have done something. But
yeah,
that's that. So you we'll talk to Bernie Miklas about it at 11:30 today.
Yeah. Yeah. I just looking at the Cardinals because there has been so much uncertainty and John Mozeliak said at spring training that usually at this time, you're talking about the flurry of moves that have been made. You're talking about the offseason. And he said, we haven't really done much. And I appreciate just being forthcoming and honest with that, although obviously there's no way you can't be honest about that. But he acknowledged, yep, I know people are frustrated. There is that transition. But, you know, as you're a player, you're not, you can't go into the season saying, well, this is a transition year, you know, we're not going to be that good. You have to always go in with a mindset that we can prove people wrong. I'm going to play my best. Maybe guys are playing for contracts. Maybe guys are playing for whatever reason. But don't you have to approach every year, especially, I mean, this is the St. Louis Cardinals, with some idea of being super competitive? You, because at the end of the day, they're humans. It'd be like me showing up to work being like, well, we suck.
Well, the players do.
Yeah.
But I think the players also, and coaches, when they're on the field, their entire goal is to win, or it should be. Especially at the beginning of the year. You always feel like you have a chance. But, I mean, if you get through the first few months of the season and it's obvious things are not going well, players will tell you that they still think they can win. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times privately, they know. They know what's happening or going to happen. They also have a pretty good idea going into a season. If they get the choice to play for a team, right? If they could play for Boston or they could play for St. Louis, and they're trying to decide, okay, where do I want to go? They'll know what teams are good, what teams are going to be competitive. That's why Arenado came here in the first place. He figured the Cardinals were going to be a competitive team with a chance to win their division and then win in the postseason. That's why he, one of the reasons he wanted to come to St. Louis and stay in St. Louis. Now, it wasn't all him. I mean, there was a trade there, so it's not like it was all about what he wanted, but he did want to play here, and he wanted to stay here because he thought those things could happen. So they know that. But, you know, like I said, as the season goes on, players are not dumb.
Mm-hmm.
They can tell if it's not going to happen. If you're a few months in, they're not going to say that. There's no way that in, like, July, they're going to go, yeah, we just don't have it. We're not winning this year.
Well,
they won't do that.
Obviously, we've talked about last year and the year before. But the Cardinals were good in 2022. I mean, they won 93 games. They won the Central.
You know, here's what's interesting.
That they were competitive.
They were. And I think they always kind of figured they would be at least that. But reality has hit them in the face a little bit.
Yeah.
It sort of said, look, you are not at the forefront of drafting and developing the way you used to be, or the process that you used was not as good as you thought it was. So that reality has smacked them in the face, and they have had to come to terms with it, and they admitted it last year during the offseason.
I'm glad you said that phrase. I have a question about that, drafting and developing, because we keep talking about the Cardinals. Well, obviously, the story has been where they have fallen short in the development program. Have they been on par with drafting, and it falls apart in the development, or have they been behind on the drafting as well? Because we've gotten some great players that, as we've found out, like weren't getting the help they needed,
didn't have
the coaching they needed, but they were great players.
I would say it's less on the drafting and probably more on development in the last 5 years or so.
Is that more and that is fixable?
Well, yeah. I mean, the evidence is, and it was discussed and admitted last year, that they don't have enough minor league staff. They've tried to rectify that a little bit this past offseason. They weren't at the forefront in terms of, you know, the pitching equipment that you need, you know, the Rapsodo, that sort of stuff. It's not exactly that, but it's like the more higher end, high tech, pitching development tools that a lot of teams use. It's that kind of thing. I'm not saying it's exactly Rapsodo, but it's that sort of thing. They weren't out in front of stuff like that. So other teams were bypassing them and doing so in a very aggressive way. So now the Cardinals are in a different position here where they have not been in a long time, since the 90s, really, where they had those those really thin years. So this is different because, I mean, people who grew up in the aughts, all they knew was winning. Because if they weren't going to World Series, they were at least winning pennants or an opportunity to win an NLCS. But now it's just been last couple of years.
And having been born in the 80s, this does feel like a new experience for me, because even though it was thin in the 90s, you had Mark McGwire and the Sammy Sosa race. Like, you had, and granted that was in the later 90s, but you had a spectacle. You had the home runs. You had the steroid era, which was a lot of fun. And then the Cardinals.
The best.
And then the Cardinals were just really good and competitive. So I feel like I had, 20 years where Cardinal baseball was very exciting. Crazy exciting.
It was kind of like, I'm not going to say they were the Patriots, because they weren't. I mean, Boston won 7 Super Bowls, or 6. But it was that expectation that every year, you at least had a chance.
Yeah.
Every single year. There was always this, well, the Cardinals are going to do something, or there's going to be some player who emerges that you weren't expecting to emerge. I've used this example a bunch. It's a friend of mine who's a Cubs fan, and I forgot who it was about now. It's not Brendan Donovan. It was before that. It might have been Paul DeJong. And he said, oh, great, another guy the Cardinals invented. Like, just out of nowhere, here's this dude who's good all of a sudden and contributing. Great. Okay. You guys keep doing it. The Cardinals keep doing it. They just haven't been doing it the last few years.
And I think we feel it, too, because there's not necessarily a spectacle. You know, it's not Aaron Judge, it's not Shohei Ohtani, because, as I mentioned, I feel like I didn't feel the non-competitiveness of the Cardinals during... let's say this. When Mark McGwire was hitting home runs, I forgot that the Cardinals weren't playoff contenders, that they weren't really...
Right.
You know, I forgot, because you were so excited about Mark McGwire. And I will even say the last few years, they've been competitive, but you also had the spectacle of Yadier Molina, Adam Wainwright, and Albert Pujols, and their retirements and their reunions and so forth. So if you have a spectacle, it does take a little bit of the sting off, but right now there's no spectacle and we're not sure how competitive the team's going to be.
The 98 Cardinals won 83 games. They were over 500, but they finished in third place.
But I forgot, so it's not, it was just fun.
Yeah, because McGwire was the focus of everything. The Cubs that year, did they win a wild card? I think they were a wild card team. But, you know, because they had Sosa doing what he was doing, and McGwire, of course. That was such a fun summer.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says. I would never trade that. And I do not blame either of those guys for whatever they did. We've talked about that a lot. By the way, Jeff Passan, who's a really great, probably the premier baseball reporter who works for ESPN, you know, he wrote about today how teams around the country, other teams in baseball, a little surprised with the way the Cardinals are operating here. He says, why St. Louis hasn't been more aggressive in dealing its bevy of talent, from Arenado to starters Sonny Gray and Eric Fetty to closer Ryan Helsley to young players Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman, who have hit a wall. It is confounding executives around the industry. If the Cardinals aren't going to spend, and they haven't spent a dollar in free agency, surely the thinking goes they should leverage the players they've got now and start building towards something more.
Would we riot, though, if we got rid of Jordan Walker?
No, I don't think so. It's a guy you don't want to get rid of, probably.
I feel like if you get rid of him and then he explodes somewhere else, I mean, you don't live that down. Like, but, that guy from a couple of years ago. The biggest name, Matthew?
Rosarena?
Yes.
Randy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Randy, that guy?
Yeah. Randy or Rosarena?
Yeah, Randy.
Yeah.
You mean Randy? Yes.
But that also was...
But, you know, that was...
That was kind of short-lived, too. He didn't keep it up for a long time, you know?
Yeah.
So,
would feel way more uneasy getting rid of our young guys.
I would, too. I'd be uneasy trading away Walker, because there is still potential for him to really do something. It's also possible he wouldn't find it here, but might find it somewhere else. That's a possibility. Yeah. You always have to keep that in mind. But I also think that while I would be uneasy about trading him, nothing should be off the table for them at this point. Because people, Cardinals fans, I think, are more accepting of the possibility of a rebuild than they would have been in the 90s. It's just a different concept now. People have seen it work. They've seen teams rebuild and come on the other side of that and be really, really good for a while. So that is probably appealing to a lot of Cardinals fans. That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. Of course, tell us what you think. 314-436-7900. Major Garrett will join us at the bottom of the hour after the news. We've got the governor at noon today. Of course, Bernie Miklas will talk Cardinals with us in the 11 o'clock hour. All coming up today on the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. By the way, Amy, we were just talking about Cardinals baseball. Mm-hmm. And did you know that you can listen to all of the games on the Odyssey app?
Oh my gosh, I did. Because that's how I listen to them. That's how my dad listens to them. I thought you were going to say, did you know Tom Ackerman is in the room? He was.
He is.
I mean,
now,
that's how KMOX we are.
Yeah.
Talk about Cardinals baseball and Tom Ackerman just manifests.
Well, he was here for a technical issue.
Well,
it's a little
thank
different.
You for the inside baseball.
People need to know that
no,
stuff.
I want them to think that you start talking Cardinals baseball and Tom Ackerman shows up.
That just isn't how it works, though. We're not lying to them.
That's a good point.
So what I wanted to tell you, what I wanted to tell people is we have now the spring training schedule.
Yes.
Okay. So your first opportunity to listen to Cardinals baseball this year, whether it is over the air, 1120 AM, 98.7 FM, or the Odyssey app, will be Saturday, the 22nd of this month. Remember how you were freaking out, Amy? That was like, next week, you'll be able to see there's baseball next week. Yes, so
next week.
A week from this Saturday, you're going to get to hear actual spring training baseball on KMOX, 12 o'clock game. They play the Marlins. And I'm with you. We talked about this a little bit the other day. I will turn on a spring game here or there.
Yeah.
The very first taste of it you get.
Oh.
In a February or March, it's the best.
It's the best.
Just driving around, you turn it on, you hear baseball. It's in a very relaxed environment. It's so good.
It's so good.
I love it.
I think this was last year. It was 2 years ago now. But I remember the first taste of spring training baseball that I had. I had gone to the grocery store. I went to Dierbergs. Get out of Dierbergs, get in my car. KMOX is on, obviously. And I hear Cardinals baseball on the radio.
Yeah.
I sat there for like 20 minutes in the Dierbergs parking lot eating lunch and listening to Cardinals baseball in my car because I was like, yes! And I think I was surprised. I think I didn't realize the game was starting. But for whatever reason, to turn it on and hear it, hot dog.
It's so great. And there are most of the games that we are going to air here. We don't have all of them because we have, you know, typical daytime programming like ours that you don't want to miss. But usually it's going to be a Saturday or Sunday through spring training. There are a couple of Wednesday games we're going to air that'll start at 12 o'clock, so we'll have those for you. Also, we are going to talk about streaming a little bit later in the show because YouTube TV is one of the major streaming services that people use, and they've jacked up their prices, and they're losing networks.
Yeah.
And despite the fact they're losing networks, they're jacking up prices. But if you've been wondering about the whole FanDuel Sports Network, how you watch Cardinals baseball and how it's going to affect you, how much it's going to cost, so you can sign up directly through the team. You don't have, or not the team, but FanDuel Sports Network. You don't have to have another streaming service. $19 a month. So $19.99 a month. They have set the prices for it. Or if you want the 12 months, it's $189.90.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this because the balkanization of the streaming services is just insane. And I think people will be longing for cable again or DirecTV, you know, satellite.
Hey, well, Amy, think about this real quick.
Yeah.
I mean, look at all of these streaming services people use that don't have FanDuel Sports Networks, which used to be Bally Sports Network. Dish Network, YouTube TV, Hulu, Live TV, and Altice. That's quite a bit.
Yeah.
There's quite a bit of options that don't have the damn thing. So if you even want to watch, you have to pay outside of it.
It frustrates my dad, a lifelong Cardinal fan, to no end. It frustrates him. That's why, I mean, again, he's like, I'm just turning the game on KMOX.
But it's free on Odyssey.
It is free on Odyssey. Hey, I wanted to do two quick local updates. You remember Urban Chestnut Brewing Company?
Yeah.
How is in the middle of bankruptcy. A local investor is set to buy Urban Chestnut. So the federal judge, Brian Walsh, on Wednesday agreed to approve the sale between Urban Chestnut and Ladue-based Keg Holdings. So that's good that Urban Chestnut is being purchased. And also, you probably heard that Uncle Bill's Pancake House, the one on Kings Highway in Northampton. So a new owner has announced plans that they will reopen in late summer or early fall of this year. So the legendary, quirky Uncle Bill's Pancake House, not the one on Manchester, but the one on Kings Highway, will reopen late summer or early fall.
Can I tell you... I just want to admit something to you about Uncle Bill's.
You've never been there sober.
That's right.
Yeah.
I've never seen it in the daylight.
Yeah. That's what everyone said, because I would always go to Courtesy Diner on Hampton at Hampton and 40.
Yeah.
And I would always go at like 7 in the morning after a run.
Yeah.
And most people would tell me, I've never been to Courtesy Diner sober. I've never been not at 2 a.m. I've only been to Uncle Bill's and Courtesy Diner at like 7 or 8 a.m.
Obviously we're very opposite.
Very opposite.
But I can tell you this, there is nothing like going into Courtesy and, you know, you've had a night and you get, I don't know, 8 plates of food and the bill is $12.
And it's amazing.
It's
not
nuts.
With eggs anymore, though. It's got to be more expensive. But,
we should check in with Courtesy and see if they've jacked up their egg prices.
Because Waffle House now has a 50-cent surcharge per egg. I will say this. Do you know what I would always get at Uncle Bill's? The 2x2x2x2.
Yes.
That is such a good plate.
Yep. There was just a story that, now that you mention it, there was a story from the Associated Press today discussing how popular breakfast restaurants are now. So they reference First Watch, which we have a couple of First Watch locations here in St. Louis, and how it's contributing to the egg prices. Because people in these breakfast spots are so popular and people are going to them around the country. So the demand for eggs, we have fewer eggs, we have more demand for those eggs. And that's part of the reason that the prices are so high now. Obviously, the bird flu killing all the damn birds.
That's a big one.
I love going to breakfast spots.
All I know is every time I hear a story about this farm had to kill 10 million chickens, it's like, really? How many chickens are in America?
I think there are more chickens in America than there are people in the world.
Oh, that's a great fun
fact. Like,
did you just make that up?
I made it up. But it's got to be true.
It's got to be true. I'm going to Google how many chickens are in America.
James O'Sullivan with the scrunch face, like, that doesn't have to be true. Look it up, James. That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. You know who would know how many chickens there are. Major Garrett, Chief Washington Correspondent for CBS News. We're going to find out how these Trump cabinet confirmations are going. They are moving along, it seems. And we'll talk to Major about that next on the Chris and Amy Show.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, Major News with Major Garrett with Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji on KMOX. It's Thursday after the 10:30 news, and we always visit with the chief Washington correspondent for CBS News. His book is The Big Truth, Upholding Democracy in the Age of the Big Lie. And he has a podcast called The Agent of Betrayal and another one that he refuses to tell us about. Major Garrett is with us on KMOX. Good morning, Major.
Good morning. How are you?
We're good. Any updates on that?
Stay tuned.
Okay, stay tuned.
Oh, man, this guy.
I know. He's
pins and needles.
Really keeping it close to the vest. I don't blame him.
Major Pins and Needles Garrett.
that's exactly what it is. All right, so right now it looks like the Senate is voting on RFK Jr. on his confirmation. I don't know, just it feels like all of these cabinet picks are going to go through. Is there any reason to think one of them is not?
No, there isn't. There was for a couple of wobbly weeks with the Senate Republicans reviewing the qualifications and the underlying politics. And Senate Republicans, almost to a person, there are a couple of exceptions, have basically decided Trump won the election. He's very powerful politically. The country in the main is okay with the start of his administration. And they would take tremendous risks blocking confirmation for any of these cabinet nominees. And so they're not. There's one no vote against Robert F. Kennedy Jr. that I've detected so far, Mitch McConnell, but he will be confirmed. Kash Patel, as FBI director, just made it through the Senate Judiciary Committee. And about 3 weeks ago, if you were to try to deduce or analyze which might be the most vulnerable, you would have said Kash Patel, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and Tulsi Gabbard. Well, Gabbard was confirmed yesterday, sworn in. Kennedy is just confirmed, will be sworn in later this afternoon at the White House. And Kash Patel also looks on his way to confirmation. So it will probably be a clean sweep for President Trump.
Yeah.
And real quick, as we sit here, they have just confirmed Robert Kennedy.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. And Major, as you mentioned, some of the names that were wobbly at first, I was surprised by Tulsi Gabbard, just because it's out there. It's out there that she visited Assad and doubted U.S. intelligence, that Assad wasn't that bad, that she, for everyone from Mitt Romney to Mitch McConnell, have said she parrots Putin's propaganda straight from the Kremlin. Obviously, we know how she feels pro-Edward Snowden. Why would our allies now feel particularly comfortable sharing intelligence with us?
They very well might not, and this is going to be an important issue. Now, as soon as she was confirmed and sworn in, Tulsi Gabbard flew to the Munich Security Conference to try to have those face-to-face encounters to reassure potentially nervous allies about intelligence sharing and her orientation to that. You know, her message might very well be, that was then, this is now. I work for President Trump. President Trump wants this relationship with you. He has this understanding of our intelligence sharing agreements, and everything President Trump says is what I'm going to do, and my past statements or my past curiosities or the passes I gave ideologically or otherwise to Assad, Edward Snowden, don't matter. What matters is I work for Trump. Trump is the interlocutor that you need to worry about, not me. I will take his direction and carry out my obligations accordingly. That may or may not reassure European allies, but what is now fundamentally clear is she's the director of national intelligence. And that is not as important as being the director of the CIA. It's not as important as being defense secretary. The director of national intelligence is essentially a super bureaucrat that oversees all the intelligence gathered by 14 different agencies. They can be a powerful advocate to the president, but not necessarily. It's entirely up to the president how powerful Tulsi Gabbard is or isn't going to be. We'll find out about that. But she's in. Trump got exactly what he wanted. And of any of the nominees a couple of 3 weeks ago, none looked more uncertain for confirmation than Tulsi Gabbard. The fact that she got through tells you Senate Republicans may individually cross Trump on one or another confirmation, but there has not been any desire to block a confirmation and deny Trump what he wants, because Senate Republicans have probably wisely calculated the political blowback would be so severe as to possibly jeopardize their future in the Senate, and that's not a risk they're willing to take.
Major Garrett with us on KMOX, and this week there was a video of Elon Musk, who about for 40 minutes answered questions from reporters inside the Oval Office as President Trump sat at the desk there. And this is all because of his DOGE efforts to cut spending in the federal government. There's the $400 million vehicle contract that apparently was awarded to Tesla from the government, but then that Tesla has been removed from, I guess, the website. What exactly is going on with that contract, and is Tesla benefiting from it?
So I don't know. We haven't, to my knowledge, at CBS confirmed that the State Department is, in fact, going to buy $400 million in Tesla Cybertrucks via a contract with Tesla. If it does, that contract probably would have been in the pipeline for some period of time, or it might have just happened with the Trump inauguration. I don't know. That would be conspicuous. It would certainly raise eyebrows and raise questions about the relationship. But there are already questions about the relationship between Elon Musk and this effort. Elon Musk is not only the world's richest man, he is an ongoing contractor with as many companies with the federal government. There means, therefore, there could be potential conflicts of interest. Even if Elon Musk does not personally, in the immediate time, benefit from all this information that he is gathering about the innards of the federal government, he could downstream. We've talked about this before. He now has access to every federal payout, which means he has access to every federal payout to every contractor. Well, some of those contractors are direct competitors of his. Now, he may say, look, I know everything I need to know about my competitors, and I'm better than them, and I'll always beat them. Fine. But everyone in this business of competing for federal contracts wants a competitive advantage, and there's no better advantage than knowing everything about the payouts to your competitors, when they get them, what the amounts are, how they got them in the first place. That's information Elon Musk now has. And the White House answer to this is, well, just trust us. If there's a conflict that bothers us, we'll stop it. But we don't know what bothers the White House. And Elon, quite clearly, with not just one but two executive orders, has been empowered by this president to go anywhere and search out anything and try to stop payments if he can.
Major, we've been talking about the overreach of the executive branch, Congress sometimes just bowing to the side and letting the president do the work, and that this executive branch overreach has been happening for multiple administrations. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've had a long career in politics. How have you seen the executive branch change, if at all, over the course of your career?
Well, look, every president I've covered wanted more authority and more power to put their ideas more rapidly into place. Paul Begala, who worked for Bill Clinton, famously said, after Republicans took control of the House and the Senate in the 1994 midterms, dramatically slowing Bill Clinton's legislative agenda, that it was important for President Clinton to use executive orders because they set things in motion and became almost law. And he had a famous saying, Stroke of the pen, law of the land. Pretty cool. Okay. That idea, stroke of the pen, law of the land, pretty cool, flowed from Bill Clinton to George W. Bush to Barack Obama to Donald Trump to Joe Biden and back now to Donald Trump. The idea that through executive power you can change the orientation because the federal government touches so much in life and not be slowed down or irritated or frustrated by the necessary log rolling and compromising you have to do with Congress. It gets you some distance. It doesn't get you all the way to where you want to go. Legislative compromises are the things that work and last the longest. American history tells us that over and over again. But every president I've covered has become more and more enamored of and tempted by using executive power. And look, for this administration, they campaigned and told the country they're going to scale back the federal government. The executive branch is something the president has a lot of sway over, constitutionally and otherwise. So there may be, and there have been legal challenges, but lots of the constitutional history and precedent is on the side of the White House here. The White House can exercise lots of authority over executive branch agencies. That's what the president's trying to do. Congress may or may not push back. I don't see very much coming from Republicans. And so this is consistent with a pattern. It's just faster and more aggressive, for sure, than any other previous administration I've covered.
Well, you mentioned that some of the courts have blocked some of these executive orders, at least temporarily. And J.D. Vance tweeted about how, you know, the judges and how the judges shouldn't get, and I'm paraphrasing him, that they shouldn't have that authority to block whatever, you know, the president wants to do. So I envision that that's laying groundwork for something. What would that be?
Well, look, what J.D. Vance said on social media is important. He said courts should not overrule the legitimate power of the president. And the load-bearing phrase there is legitimate power of the president. The presidency is not a non-entity in our three-tiered form of government, executive, legislative, and judicial. It's an important one, a very powerful one, and become more powerful in the 20th and 21st century than it was in the 18th and 19th century. So I don't want to say that J.D. Vance is setting America up for some sort of idea where the Trump administration would unilaterally ignore federal judicial orders. It hasn't so far. It's abided by every single one. He has toyed on podcasts with the idea of just ignoring it, telling an apocryphal story that Andrew Jackson never said about a Supreme Court ruling dealing with Cherokee Indians in Georgia. That's become kind of a fanboy thing on Trumpist podcasts. It's not real, and the Trump administration hasn't done that yet. Are they trying to lay the groundwork for that? I don't know. What I do know is checks and balances are real. Right now, this administration is adhering to every temporary restraining order and federal judge maneuver. They waited for the judge to assess the legality of the buyout offer. It took a couple of weeks, but the federal judge said, no, this is legit. 75,000 people have signed up for early retirement from the federal government, and that's proceeding apace. That's an example of a federal judge looking at it, weighing it against the law and the precedent, and saying, no, this is an executive branch function. If people want to sign up for it, they can. Will they get paid? Will the things that have been promised by the administration come to fruition? That's the next part of the story.
Yeah, I think that's why the language of presidents can obfuscate the illegality or legality of something that they're doing, because Joe Biden, you know, bragged, the Supreme Court tried to block me from forgiving student debt, but I did it anyway, which right. implies that he illegally defied the Supreme Court when really he tried to find loopholes.
Another way to maneuver around the parameters set forth in the Supreme Court rejection of his first attempt. Exactly.
But it sounds like he was defying them.
The politics of that, by the way, blew up in his face.
Yeah.
The politics of that, as we've long discussed, never worked for the administration. I don't understand. I've never understood why they obsessed about that, because the politics were never there. Lots of people who pay their student loans didn't understand why student loans were being serially forgiven. They didn't understand why some of that forgiveness was disproportionately helping out the wealthiest college-educated people in America. Those things never made sense politically, and there was plenty of blowback. And look, President Obama did things to challenge the law and the courts. Several times were overturned. Presidents have toyed with this. George W. Bush toyed with it, famously after 9/11 in lots of different ways. So presidents come into office and they've always, dating back to Harry Truman, been frustrated by the bureaucracy and the resistance you get from the bureaucracy. Harry Truman famously said when Dwight David Eisenhower was about to become president, the poor guy, he's a former general. He's going to tell people to do something and they're all going to look at him and do nothing and there won't be a thing he can do about it, unlike when he was a general and could make things happen. So this notion that presidents have and can be frustrated by either the indifference, the slowness, or the redirection of the federal bureaucracy has been with us for a long time.
Major Garrett, anything you want to tell us about before we say goodbye? I don't mean that. I'm just saying, is there something
else
you want to tell us about?
Anything else?
Nothing else on my mind. Okay. We're all good. We're all good.
All right. Thank you again. We'll talk next Thursday.
Keep
we'll
it
talk
up.
Next week. All right.
Thank you, guys.
Chief Washington correspondent for CBS News, Major Garrett, with us here on KMOX.
I would argue best laugh in media. I love Major Garrett's laugh.
It really comes from the gut.
It makes you feel
it's a guffaw.
Happy. I love a good guffaw.
Yeah. That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. Did you see this? Next.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Okay, man, there's so much stuff that I want to know if you saw, Ranj. How about this one, though? A House Republican bill was introduced on Tuesday that would allow President Trump, in his efforts, if he were to purchase Greenland, they can rename it Red, White, and Blueland.
Is that a joke? That was
no.
A joke. Was that a joke?
Representative Earl Buddy Carter, a Republican out of Georgia, had a two-page Red, White, and Blueland Act of 2025, which would authorize the president to enter into negotiations to acquire Greenland and to rename Greenland as Red, White, and Blueland.
Okay, come on, dude.
It's Saturday
dude,
Night Live, I
come
think.
Come on, dude. He's not serious.
You cannot be serious.
He cannot be serious.
Yeah.
Come
well.
On, dude. All right, whatever.
Also, update. There's 3.5 chickens for every one human in the world.
Oh, yeah, we were trying to figure out how many chickens there are.
In the world.
Yep.
Yeah, there are 1.5 billion chickens in the United States, which is 1.2 slaughter chickens, like your rotisserie,
uh-huh.
And 375 million egg-laying hens.
Yes.
So you get about 1.5 billion chickens. But
and we
in
have
the
to
world,
keep murdering the chickens because they keep getting bird flu, which means we're down on eggs.
Listen, if 1.5 billion chickens, if the chickens got their act together,
yeah,
they could take over the country.
A message here on Facebook. You can watch us on Facebook, you know, the Chris and Amy Show. Just go find the KMOX page and we're there. Also on YouTube and Twitter. But Bob says, other than eggs, what other grocery items have increased in price? I am tired of hearing about the price of eggs. We don't just eat eggs. He's right. I don't know what else is more expensive, but I know that eggs is everything.
I can tell you one, cereal. When did cereal cost so much? Sorry, quick note, because we got thrown off on the eggs. 74 billion chickens a year are killed. 74 billion chickens a year. We kill them for human consumption. Do you know if the chickens could take over so easily?
No, they can't. Did you see that Aaron Rodgers is gone from the New York Jets? They announced today they told him to pound sand.
Did
so,
they really?
Well, they told him last week, but they announced it on their official website today. So, what a great era of Jets football. That guy sucks. Also, Amy,
yes.
Did you see that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has announced the finalists?
I did see that.
For those who could potentially be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that includes the likes of Joe Cocker, Billy Idol, Outkast, Fish, the Black Crowes,
Mariah Carey,
the White Stripes, Oasis.
Oh, wow. How many can go in a year? Is there a cap?
I don't think
those are some big bands.
So there are 14 nominees, 8 for the first time. I don't think there is a limit, but they will be revealed in late April. We're going to find out who is going in. I
Why do I feel like this happens five times a year?
No. I would have to think that Oasis will get in just because they're on tour.
No.
I bet there's a little bit of a fix. Right?
I would think so.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. And